This is Zorak, and you're listening to the Scarab Swarmcast, hosted by John Manis of the Scarab Gaming Convention, Columbia, South Carolina. That's what you're doing!
This is the Scarab Swarmcast. In this podcast, we discuss games, anime, conventions, and a variety of other topics. Scarab is an annual convention in Columbia, South Carolina, and members of the Scarab Swarm can be spotted at various events demoing and running a variety of games. For more information on Scarab, go to www.s-c-a-r-a-b.com. Welcome to the Scarab Swarmcast. I'm your host, John Manis, and with me today is my wife,
Ruby.
The two of us have been on the show plenty of times, but usually we've had other people, but on this episode, it's just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
And the reason for that is because today we want to talk about two-player games, in particular two-player RPGs, because there's something we've been doing recently where the two of us have been playing a game of Pathfinder.
Yeah.
In particular, we chose the to try out the Mythic Adventures rules,
which has been really cool so far.
Yep. For people unfamiliar, Pathfinder is basically its derivative of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
What is Mythic Adventures?
Mythic Adventures, at first when I heard about it, I thought it was, oh, you know, D&D and Pathfinder only goes to level 20. Oh, this goes to 20 and beyond. No, this doesn't. You can start a character at level 1 and have them be Mythic, or you can have an existing character that's like, say, level 5 or 6 or something, and you complete some great trial or something, or you're touched by the deities, and you become Mythic. You basically are extraordinarily powerful. I kind of equate it to kind of like in a video game when you get a uber level up, you know?
And it's, to me, it's sort of this is the thing that Tales of Legends and such
Are made of.
Are really made of. So when you think, oh, I'm going to play Pathfinder, I'm going to play a high fantasy campaign, well, this kind of takes that to where I'm sure a lot of those folks who think of that high fantasy campaign kind of really want it to be. To me, this is sort of like when you're watching The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings and you see Legolas do all sorts of crazy stuff, but you don't really see, like, not every elf is jumping around on top of elephants, shooting them in the head and taking them down.
Right.
Well, Legolas obviously has the Mythic Adventures book, is what I'm thinking.
See, when we started this, when I first started playing Pathfinder, I kind of was missing this kind of feel as far as this goes, because I came from a high adventure game that you ran in AD&D, and then you moved it to 3.0 and 3.5, and you personally amended and made things that went outside of the rules, and as a group we were like, yeah, we'll just go with whatever you tell us. So it was a lot of home rules and things like that.
Right.
And Pathfinder never kind of had that feel to me, and you never really got into, from the home campaign, you never started adding rules and things like that and getting those custom legendary weapons and things. But but that's kind of what Mythic Adventure does. So
right. And we'll go into a little bit more detail about that. But first off, why are we even doing this? What made us decide that we wanted to try out this game, just the two of us?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. The long and the short of it is our friends suck. No. No, they don't.
Not all of our friends. You know it. You know who you are.
No. things got really busy between our duties for Scarab and conventions and things like that, and scheduling times. Some of our friends had babies recently. Some of them are pregnant. Some of them just got married, you know. So a lot of real life stuff got in the way, where our groups really couldn't get together on any real scheduled times. And we were really jonesing for a game that wasn't society play.
Right. And I'm coming from a background where I'm, like, always either playing or running a game. So these long stretches of not playing or running an RPG was really just killing me.
Because John also does some short stories and things like that. He's a very creative guy. He likes to write, so he's got a lot of ideas that he wants to implement somehow, whether it's from writing a 3-page story or running a game. So
yeah, and I found that the in particular with this Mythic Adventures and just Pathfinder, just running any game really is really a good outlet for me to be able to do a lot of that. And like Ruby said, this is part of coming off of a really long and involved D&D campaign that then evolved into different editions of D&D.
And then we
tried to start it in Pathfinder so many times, but it really came down to availability of right. other people to play. And it's like, well, I know what her schedule is, and she knows what my schedule is, and we like doing stuff together.
I, for those that don't know, I met John because of actually that particular campaign. It was Deadlands, but then it went into that campaign. So he was my GM, and I ended up marrying him because he's that good a GM.
Hooray! So guys, take note of that. You need to be really good GMs. So
you brought up a good point. And I think we were going to mention it later on, but I think this is a good spot for it.
Okay.
Part of the reason we did it, scheduling. We know each other's schedule. We know when we can play and when we can't play. And it's kind of cool because if we say, hey, John, I'm really bored. I don't really want to sit here and watch something on TV, or I don't want to click mindlessly on some game. Will you run something? Will you run a little bit of the game? You know, and we could do it in 2-hour blocks, or like this past Sunday, we started around noon and we ate some lunch and then we did a little game, and he's like, hold on for me. I got to do a little bit of maintenance and kind of
right.
get something set up. And then we played for a couple of hours, and I was like, oh, well, let's go make dinner. And we ate dinner, and then we came back, and I think we watched an episode of something, and then it was like, hey, let's finish this up real quick. You know, let's finish up what we were on. And, you know, we ended about 9 o'clock. And
yeah.
So we played all day, per se, but not really, because, you know, we took breaks and we did other things. And
right. Not only just being able to work with our schedule, because, you know, that's easy enough for us to do, but it's really just the way the whole Mythic Adventures thing is set up. Because we're going to steer us more okay. to talking about this a little. It really helps out with just me having one player that I'm GMing for.
Yeah, because Mythic stuff can get really crazy. It's really crazy, very cool, but it can be very crazy. So I can see where having a group of 5 Mythic players versus one would be
It would definitely be a different beast. I would probably have to, and that's good. That comes into some challenges I face as a GM. So let me talk about that for a little bit. There's a challenge as far as scaling, because I have one player. So I have to figure out, well, how can I scale this thing? I know Pathfinder has a CR and even an MR, which is a mythic
rating?
Version of challenge rating. CR is a challenge rating. And usually you're supposed to use that to kind of gauge, for example, if something's a CR2, then that means it should be about an average or just the appropriate challenge for a group of 4 players that are level 2. Well, Mythic kind of throws that a little bit of a curveball.
Oh, very much so. We found that.
Right. So as far as scaling that, usually what I find is that with Ruby's character, I can usually go about 4 or 5 levels above what her character actually is. And if it's not a mythic creature, or if their mythic ratings maybe 1 or 2 below hers, then it usually gives her a pretty tough challenge. For example, in this last thing we did, she was level 10 mm-hmm. with 5 tiers of mythic rank, mm-hmm. which...
Now, we have been playing this for a bit. We started
right.
June-ish, I guess.
When I was checking, this was our 9th game session. But some of those game sessions have been over a course of a weekend. So
right.
So yeah, but it's been, we've been playing this for a while. But anyway, she's level 10, And I said, well, let's see what happened. Let's see if she could take on a Kraken. So, turned out it proved to be a bit of a challenge because I was also throwing stuff at her, trying to really challenge her with it. I know she uses lots of ranged weapons, so I used grapples and grabs to kind of keep her away from
to
using range.
That.
To restrict
yeah.
that. So still a bit of a challenge, but as soon as she got within range, she blew that Kraken away.
Right.
But it took close to 15 rounds of combat, but I dished out a lot of damage, and
so did I.
So did you.
Yeah.
But so scaling was a bit of a challenge with this particular one because I'm working in my home campaign setting, and I'm kind of having this take place. It's in the world, and I kind of want to deal with some events that deal with my overall storyline. In many ways, and I've said, "Well, what this would be neat. Let's have this take place in some place that I've mentioned a bunch of times, but haven't actually done anything with." So it's this place that's far to the north. So of course, it's this frozen, icy continent way to the north. And so I've been
think Iceland, Greenland.
Yeah.
Which one? Greenland's the one that's covered in ice, and Iceland's the one that's temperate.
Right.
So ice.
Right.
So Greenland.
Right. Because they named it Greenland so that people would actually go there.
Yeah.
So the other challenge has been kind of a neat one from a GM perspective. I've been like, oh, what sort of environmental things can I mess with? I usually don't get to mess with a lot of these things dealing with like the ice and the snow and such. And then making sure I got appropriate monsters and creatures and such in there, which has been neat because
they're things you wouldn't normally see in most settings and campaigns
right.
because you're down in a temperate forest or a swamp or... You know.
Right, like those that glacier frog that you ran into.
Yeah,
you're only gonna run into that in one place, and boom, I set you there. The other thing I kind of did this that was kind of a neat little thing, gave me an interesting little challenge, was I picked up these things called Rory Story Cubes. I'm trying to see if I can. They're by Game Right Games, if I recall correctly. But they're just little, they're almost like D6s. You get a little pouch with about, it's like 9 or 12 of them, I think it is.
Yeah, I think it's 12.
But instead of pips or numbers on each side, it's got different pictures, different little pictograms of all sorts of different things.
Right. And they have different versions.
Right. There's one for
Voyage. The normal one, Voyages.
The regular Voyages and the blue one.
I don't know what the blue one is.
The blue one, which is Actions. And they've got a few other little random little things as well. And what we would usually at the very beginning of the thing, I would go, okay, let's pick. I would
three dice.
Let's pick three or four. Yeah, usually three. Three dice, and just we'll just roll them, see what the pictures are, and I'll kind of go, okay, I'll work a little adventure or so around these things. And I think that's turned out pretty neat.
Right.
As well.
It hasn't just been an adventure either, because some of them have picture. I mean, some of the pictures are things like I remember the first three sessions we did. You rolled them, and the same die came up each time.
What was that,
so
like a tree?
One
or something?
No, it was the tower.
The
so
tower.
One time you're like, oh, this kind of looks like a sword hilt to me, so it's going to be a sword hilt. And one time it was a tower, and yeah. I don't remember what the third time was, but
yeah, it almost looks like a stovepipe.
Right.
Top hat.
So
I don't know how I'm going to work Abraham Lincoln into Pathfinder, but...
But why is it you decide you wanted to check out the story cubes?
Well, the main reason I wanted to try out the story cubes is because I'm going to be using them to generate random plot elements for this year's Scarab Iron GM.
Whoop, whoop.
Yep. Yes, you should all check out things about Scarab Iron GM. I guess I'll do a quick little plug for that. Scarab Iron GM. We've already got all of our
six
GMs. Six GMs signed up for it. It's exciting. That's probably the most GMs we've had for any of these.
Correct.
Scarab Iron GMs. We've got some really cool prizes that are going to come out. Some really cool dice towers and such from altruistic gifts. We've got some maps that are going to be given to us by Fabled Environments.
You remembered.
I did remember. We've also got some cool graph paper and stuff. Well, not graph paper.
Well, it's a mapping
gamer
paper.
Graph paper. Yeah, yeah, gaming paper from Gaming Paper.
Yeah.
I haven't said this yet, but the GMs are going to get some Rory story cubes as well.
Yeah, they get to keep their story cubes.
So they get to keep. They're going to generate their random thing, and then they're going to get a pouch full of a whole set of them too. So that's going to be cool. I hope I didn't leave anybody out as far as who's giving us prizes. And
no,
stuff.
That sounds about right. Yeah. We have some other sponsors that they'll be able to pick their prizes from, but
Oh yeah, there's going to be a lot more prizes. These are just some of the
highlights.
The highlights of the thing. Of course, players. We need players to play in it too. Everybody who plays is going to get these really cool custom Scarab Iron GM poker chips. And the only way to get those is by participating in some way, shape, or form in Scarab Iron GM.
Yep.
And players are, yeah, it's the players who signed up on Warhorned
are going to get a little something. So
it's going to be a mystery. But hey, we're going to go back to our two-player games. So that was some of the challenges that I faced. What about you? What sort of, from a player's perspective?
Well, really when we decided we were actually going to do this, because I think it was one of those, I'd mentioned it a couple of times throughout the years, and finally this last time I was like, hey, you know, we could just play together.
Right.
I hear what you're thinking, you dirty-minded people out there. Not what I meant. But anyway, so when he finally said, hey, yeah, you want to do this? I was like, yeah. But I really had to think about what kind of character I wanted to play, especially since he said we were going to be playing in that colder environment area, that Arctic-y area of his world. And I was like, well, I'm going to be a solo person. What kind of personality, what kind of, you know, I really had to think hard and long on what I wanted to try and do and be, what character and class I wanted to do. Because, you know, a lone wizard in the tundra, not as survivable even if you're mythic versus, you know, orc barbarian. But I ended up playing a half-orc ranger. I did end up getting a wolf animal companion. I flip-flopped between a snow leopard and a wolf.
But... so you've gone with a rabbit, little white rabbit.
Scary. But the mythic part of it too, that's the other thing. You choose a path on the mythic. I think Hierophant, Guardian.
And Champion, I want to say it is.
Champion, and there's four or five of them.
And the Archmage.
And the Archmage.
And there's like a little one right. For Tricksters, I think it is. And...
right. So you also then I also had to think, I was like, well, what kind of mythic do I want to be? Because each of them get something special that they choose from.
It's pretty neat things too.
Right. I am a half orc ranger guardian is what I chose for my mythic.
You've had some pretty awesome stuff on there. Are there any particular abilities that you got from that you recommend or you thought came in really, really handy or been really, really nice to kind of play around with so far?
Again, because it was solo, the way I went with it, instead of, there are many different options and flavors you can go with, I ended up choosing, because in Mythic you get to choose some extra bits to you. I chose something called Mythic Paragon, which basically allows me to calculate my Mythic level as if it were two levels higher, which, this is where it plays into, you get additional hit points depending on your Mythic tier. So at first level, I'm getting 15 extra hit points from being mythic and choosing that paragon. So right there, starting out survivability wise.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was the big thing. The other big one that I did is there's basically it's regeneration is what it is. You activate it and you regenerate 5 hit points per round. And you can get it multiple times and each time it increases by 5. So not having to carry around all sorts of like healing potions or wands or things like that, not having to memorize healing spells, just being able to, you know, kick on some healing and I'm good to go. But those were the choices I made because I was solo playing. If I'd been within a group, I probably would have went a different direction.
Right. And I admit, based off of your character was going to kind of really...
yes, my character concept helped determine that too, because I decided she was going to have been raised pretty much out in the wilderness with her father as a hunter-gatherer type person, you know, traveling up and down the coast, hunting for their survival, wintering in a cave, you know, that sort of thing. So I already had that kind of background set up. And then but that's how I make most of my characters. I don't usually do stats and then background. I usually do a background and then find the things that work.
Yeah. And what I found was with, based off of the way you made your character, based off the stuff you've told me about your character, mm-hmm. really kind of helped determine how, and this is just a good GM tool anyways, kind of helped me determine, okay, well, this is kind of how I need to gear the adventure. Okay. I don't need to really... I shouldn't really throw in a lot of stuff where it's like, oh, let's look for traps and things like that. Although you would have been pretty decent with traps. But that's the thing. You chose a ranger, so you're pretty good at just about everything.
Right. She's not great at everything. She's decent enough to get by at what she needs to. But man, is she a beast with that bow, with how I spec'd her out, so to speak.
Yeah. But if you had decided, oh, I want to do a wizard, it would have been a little different.
It would have been a different kind of campaign.
But it still would have worked. I definitely wouldn't have thrown some of the stuff I threw right at the beginning at you. Because I think right at the beginning, the first thing I threw at you was some sort of it wasn't a walrus. It was something like a walrus.
It was not an allop. An allop. No.
It was a bunyip.
Bunyip,
which is like all the worst aspects of a sea lion and a wolverine kind of combined. And I about kicked your butt with that. But yeah. I think that was like one of the few times I actually almost completely trounced you.
No, there's been another.
Because you had to run away from
that. I did have to run away. But that was literally the first session, and we were both figuring out something. You know, it was one of those, oh, right. do-do-do-do-do, I'm walking. Oh, look. Crap, that hurts a lot. I gotta run.
Yeah. One of the other neat things was, because I'll talk about as far as how I had to do treasure and items and such, which just kind of goes in with the campaign.
And it's also another good GM tip, just in general, not for two-player games, but in general.
Right. Because the character she made, very self-sufficient, and because of the setting where there wasn't really a lot of really big towns or such in the area, when I would give out treasure, because you got to give out treasure, instead of usually giving out a lot of gold and gems and such, I would tend to give out, that's when I would really give out like items, and it would be things that would be useful. And this is where some of the magic items would come in. And because it was just you, I would lean a little bit heavier on the magic item set part. And because we're doing mythic adventures, they have these legendary items, legendary things. And I was like, well, I want to play with that. You want to play with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got this legendary bow.
Yeah. I created a legendary bow. Basically, you burn a slot from your mythic thing and you say, I want a legendary item. And then you create a legendary item. You work with your GM and he can approve it. And the way we set it up is I created it, and I had it and it was used up in my slot, but I didn't actually acquire the item till a little bit later. So we worked it in story-wise. Right. So it wasn't a da-ding, new item.
Right. You know. And even the weapon you have is very versatile. It's very useful for your solo character.
Correct.
Basically, you've got it's a bow, but it's because it's an intelligent item, because that's the way we built it. It had some ability, so it's a bow, but it can change into a falchion.
Mm-hmm. So it's two weapons in one, essentially.
So you're covered for your ranged and for your melee.
Right.
It can do stuff. It can actually cast a few spells to increase its power and such, which
Again,
is great.
This is how I built it. There are many options to make legendary items. You can make armor. You can make miscellaneous items like amulets and trinkets. I chose a weapon.
Right. If you want to make a magical legendary hat, you could do that.
You could.
So it was also, I had some fun throwing in some other interesting things. Like you've got these goggles that I decided those need to be intelligent item too. So that's been interesting.
See, I think also because you know me, I'm a weird pack. Any game, it ends up, even if I try not to, I end up being a pack rat. Like in one of his other games in the campaign, we found a left boot of Elvenkind. I hung on to that sucker forever looking for its mate.
Don't you still have it? I think your character still has it.
That particular set still has it. But I personally, Ruby, like to play with all the trinkets because I, in weird situations, like example with the Kraken, I come up with some interesting ways to use them.
Yes, you had a really interesting way of using the decanter of endless water as a form of a jet propulsion, as it were.
In the water. Yes. But... Yeah. 9 times out of 10, I don't ever do anything with the weirdo little items, but sometimes.
Yeah. So this character is definitely, in my opinion, this character is sort of the equivalent of if we had a full group of mythic characters. It really is.
I mean, between her animal companion, which I spent a lot of time jacking up as well, because it is not mythic, it's just a normal wolf.
Yeah.
But I've one of the main towns that I could go to that I ended up at, I made sure that I and the money I had accumulated because I had nothing to spend it on because I was in the middle of the woods.
Right.
I basically dumped all this money into an awesome set of armor for my wolf. Yep. And every time I level, instead of taking a hit point or skill point for myself, I give my companion to my companion. Yeah. So I've done things like that. When I level and the companion levels and he gets feats, you know, I've put feats into making him more survivable.
Yeah. One of my little, I guess, minor gripes about Mythic Adventures is I wish that there was because there's things you can do some sort of kind of mythic-y stuff with your like familiars and Eidolons if you're a summoner. But there's nothing really like that for Animal Companion. You found that one ability where you can go, I want him to attack right now.
Yeah, but that's part of my Paragon. That's part of my Guardian ability. There are a few options that I could imbue my Animal Companion with DR, but I had to set that up three steps wise. So, I mean, it took a lot to make an Animal Companion better, so.
Yeah, I just wish there was something where you could go, I'm going to add this mythic template to my beastie. I want to put the savage template. Yeah. Just gives it an extra attack and all of its tech do bleed damage, but I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I say that, but that's pretty harsh, actually. I think I put that on the Kraken, so every time you would slap you with a tentacle, it was like, and bleed damage.
But because I activated my fast healing.
Which is, magical healing.
Magical healing. It gets rid of all the bleed.
I laugh at your bleed damage.
And I went right before he did, so any of the bleed damage didn't really matter.
Right. All right, so we've been talking some about Mythic. Is there any other coolness that you could think of to say about your character or the game itself? Or any advice or such?
Well, to begin with, I am biased. I am married to you. I have always loved your home campaign world setting right from the start. I'm in a unique position. And to some degree, our friend Doug is too, but me more so. Mm-hmm. I've gotten to see things develop, and I've gotten to see this. Oh, wait a minute. That was way back, you know, in the AD&D version, you mentioned that, and it just came up again. And I actually see how and where that comes from now. So like I said, I'm in a unique perspective to see that because I have played in it for so long and it's come around. And again, I'm biased because I'm married to you and I love you and I think you're creative. Anyway, the story's really neat. I think you've done a really good job in the setting, the Arctic setting, with the feel of, you know, time-wise that's progressed. It was late fall when we kind of started the in-game.
Right.
And I went through fall. I had we did winter and we've done spring, you know, and we're just about to start a summer. So, you know, the campaign wise, it also doesn't feel like it's like, oh, well, it's summer now. You know, you've actually progressed it and the things that I've done and even the downtime's explained. It also, that's one of the other things. It hasn't felt like, oh, rush, 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 rush. No time to do anything in between.
Which happens a lot in regular campaigns when you've got a lot of people. It just seems like, well, we've been traveling and fighting for...
Constantly.
Like we've been fighting for months. Oh, it's only been a week?
Right.
This is the worst week ever.
Right. So in that regard, that's kind of nice. So yes, I have a goal I'm working towards. I have this item that I want to try and find a way to destroy it. And I'm having to go through these different steps. You know, I've found Feldrake, you know, he's like, well, maybe someone over here at the stronghold, the Dwarven strongholds, the Storm Worshippers will know something because they have a huge library.
And you've gone through that, yeah.
So I traveled there and there was an ordeal that was taken care of there. You know, and I spent some time basically going through the libraries, helping them, you know, getting research, things like that.
Yeah.
And from there, it's like, oh, well, we don't know necessarily about this person, but here's what we found out, you know, myth-wise and legends, and here's a direction you might be able to go to get more information or answers. So, you know, and you go to this town, I've had to go to this town, and
I have to procure help to get to a boat to get to this island, and their payment was they wanted to help finding a shipwreck and that's supposedly around the island that was guarded by a giant kraken. Yep. And
ta-da, kraken.
Yeah.
Krakens happen.
Which was funny because as we were setting up, because I already knew where I was heading, that I was going to be going on a boat to an island. And I said, so help me God if there's a kraken. And he just kind of turns around.
I was like, I've been setting up this kraken for the past hour and a half. Yeah, there's going to be a kraken.
Right.
Yeah. For me, what I've liked about this is it is almost kind of giving me a license to go, you know, play with all the little GM things that I don't normally get to play with as GM. You know, they give me these books and go, look at this cool creature. I'm like, that's nice. That would completely destroy not only all of the characters, but
all their lineage and everything. Does this mean that you're going to throw that like 100-armed demon god thing?
We'll see. I don't know. That thing's still kind of out there, kind of beefy as far as,
yeah,
as far as I know. It's more viable.
Well, some of the other things. Let's see here. Downfalls of it. Again, bias. I've enjoyed it. I think you know me well enough to know what I'd enjoy, that you also wouldn't throw something at me that I'm going to get pissy at you about. As far as not that you are even, you know, pulling your punches or whatnot. What I'm getting at is,
but I'm not just constantly throwing people at you that goes, oh, well, you can't use your weapon. All your stuff's ineffective against everybody you run into
right
at this point.
You're not.
I'm not doing the bad GM thing.
I'm not a huge skill monkey. I've got skills and knowledge skills, but you're not like, oh, well, you don't have engineering, so I'm going to throw all sorts of knowledge engineering stuff at you, or you know.
I play up to your strengths.
Because you're doing this to enjoy the story as much as I'm playing it to enjoy the story.
Right.
So it's a little bit more towards, yes, we're playing Pathfinder, and yes, we're rolling the dice, and we're using its rules and everything. But to me, it kind of feels a little more like those freeform RPGs where they're diceless.
Almost like a storytelling RPG.
Right. But we're still using the mechanics and dice.
Right. And I found out that my dice apparently just hate me. No matter who I'm running a game for. No matter how many people I'm running a game for.
Yeah.
And for a while there, I was like, you were not able to roll above a seven.
Yeah.
It was weird. But yeah, my advice for any GMs and such, and this kind of goes for anybody really, if you're going to try this, make sure you do it with somebody that you trust. Someone that you have a really good line of communication with, because it is a lot more you and the player kind of working
together.
It's more
cooperative.
It's a lot more cooperative. I think it's a lot more rewarding, too.
I think personally, there's been certain things that I said, hey, I'd like to see this happen somewhere along the way, you know, or this sounds like a neat idea.
Right.
And it might not happen right now, but I've noticed little things like that pop in.
Right.
You know, or it was like, I can't remember. I'm pretty sure there was a creature. I was like, hey, I'd love to see X creature.
I've been like, okay.
Right.
You say that now? No. It's been pretty cool. So, okay. So we've talked a lot about Pathfinder and Mythic Adventures.
Yeah.
What about this? Do we think there's any other systems or gaming systems that this might work really well with?
I think Shadowrun and Deadlands in particular are two that it would work really well for.
Okay. You mentioned Deadlands. I'm going to say probably most Savage Worlds settings might be good for that. I don't know.
Savage Worlds itself also is a more cooperative game, even in a larger group anyway.
Right. And if you want to do something to kind of give it that beefier feel, there's little tricks like Savage Worlds, you can always say, all right, you have this many points to spend on stuff.
More points.
A little bit more points to spend on stuff. And in Shadowrun, I know the new edition uses the priority system, but you could still, but use the priority system, but then you say, instead of, you know, the whatever it is, 20 karma that you start with to spend extra stuff, you could give them extra karma, extra new yen, stuff like that. Those are two pretty good systems. I'm trying to think if there's any other systems that might be also pretty good for a two player. I could think of some systems that would be horrible for two players.
Like what?
Well, Kobolds Ain't My Baby would be horrible with just two players.
Yeah.
you know, I could just sit here, right here. Yeah, Maid would be bad because who do you have to play off of? Who do you have to compete with for favor from the master if you're the only maid?
Yeah.
Paranoia, I think, would lose a lot if it was just a player and GM.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Call of Cthulhu.
Okay.
Because what would be more frustrating than me just sitting there going, you're insane, make a new character. You're insane, make a new character. Ha
ooh,
ha ha.
Ooh, ooh. Dogs in the Vineyard.
Dogs in the Vineyard. Well, if we want to get into some of those more indie games. Yeah, Dogs in the Vineyard would be really, really... I don't think it could work with just...
You can't.
Amber Diceless role-playing game?
Yeah,
no, it can't. Because guess what? You're rank one in everything. You are the best, you know... It might be good. Might be kind of cool for the player, but I think it'd get boring really quickly. I'd be like, what do you want to do? I want to do this. Fine, you do it.
Yeah.
Game over. I think some superhero games could work because, I mean, you know, Marvel puts out titles. Marvel puts out tons of titles that only have one superhero in it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. This is where you might, you know, people are, usually when you play superhero games, it's like everybody's running around as like, well, we're all a bunch of like Blue Beetles and Fire and Ice and people like that. You know, when everybody wants to play Superman, you don't want to play Superman. Unless it's a, you know, GM and a player. Then ta-da.
I could see that. It's Superman. Not going to happen with us.
It's not the superhero because you won't play superhero games.
Which is weird because I love the heroic high fantasy stuff. But then again, on the flip side, I like the Shadowrun stuff too. Not the amoral, necessarily wet work version. I mean, I've made characters like that, but in general, my personality, what I play a role-playing game for is heroics and goodness. I'm not one of those newfound little kids that like to be play evil, everything evil. So,
or as you know, as I've heard, you know, I can only play evil characters. I don't know how to play anything else. It's like, you're a horrible person, I guess. Surely you know how to play at least neutral. Most people do. Good grief. I'm trying to think if there's any other RPGs that would be good, that might be really, really good with just a player and GM. I'm sure there's tons out there. I would love to hear what other people have to think about this. Of course, email us at swarmcast@scarab.com, scarab.com. Now, I know not everybody who comes to Scarab or listens to this just plays RPGs.
That's true.
There's tons of board games that are designed specifically for two players.
And war games.
I mean, yeah, I could go on about what war games are good, but guess what? Almost all of them
I'm not setting up a war game in our table. I'm not into that.
You know, if you're into 40K, guess what? You could probably play that with just one other person. I bet you can.
I'm sure you can. That's how the tournaments are set up.
That's right. The tournaments. Like the tournaments that are going to be at Scarab this year.
Wow.
Like the War Machine.
Warma Hordes.
War Machines and Hordes, which had some pretty kick-ass looking trophies they're giving out.
Yeah.
Kind of jealous of their trophies.
A little bit here, too.
But yeah, board games, tons of board games, some in particular that we play that we like that work really well for two players. Descent. I know.
We don't have the new version.
We don't have
the old one.
Right,
still.
We don't have second edition, but we have the first edition one. And I know some people get down on Descent because, oh, it takes so long to set up. Honestly,
it only takes that long when you're the first two or three times.
Yeah, and if you do it on a more regular basis, you and I got it down where it's like, oh, you want to play? Cool. Give us like...
Which map?
Give us 5 or 10 minutes. Because we work together. I mean, we really work together. It's like, okay, cool. I'm be the overlord. I'll set up my deck. Here's the map I need. And you go, okay, cool. Let me set up the map. Boom, boom, boom. Get everybody set up. Boo, we're good to go.
Yeah.
But if it's the two of us, it still works pretty well.
Yeah.
In fact, even better because we don't have to set up
the people. We have a couple of those Lego games like Minotaur Isle or...
Yeah.
They were little Lego games.
Those are the Pyramid one?
Yeah.
I think it was just called Pyramid.
Yeah.
Of course, Super Dungeon Explorer.
Yeah, that's my baby.
Gotta talk about that because it has lots of really cool chunks of plastic in it.
Yep. We have actually an acquaintance, Ian Grulick, which is Doug's brother, and his wife, Jess. We met up with them again at Atomicon just recently, and they were talking about how they look for a lot of two-player board games and things like that because they don't usually go out and play with a lot of friends or anything. So they sit at home and play these two-player games. And I don't think it was Carcassonne. That was the one. That's the big one that they play.
Okay. I know they were excited to get, what was it, Elder Sign? I think it was out there.
Elder Sign. That one was one of the better of those Call of Cthulhu games.
Yeah. It plays a lot faster.
Yes. Less pieces, sort of.
So some horrible board games to play with just two people. I'm going to say Trivial Pursuit.
Twilight Imperium.
I'm sure... Now, you're just saying that because you think it's a horrible game to play with any number of players.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Maybe.
I'm going to say, really, some of those strategy games like Risk and stuff like that, I don't know if I've this is me having grown up playing it with just my dad. When it's only two players, it's like, well, I wonder who's going to attack me.
Right.
Probably you.
There's no one I can make a deal with to...
Right. I'm pretty sure I know who I'm going up against. But yeah, things like that. Wits and Wagers, which we did get to play just recently. That would be horrible with two players.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it'd be horrible. Yeah. It wouldn't be as fun. Yeah. Apples to apples, you can't play it with two players. Things like that. Cards Against Humanity, can't play it with two players. All right. I think we might have beaten this
horse
two-player horse to death. Whatever. So yeah, thank you, Ruby, for showing up. See, this is kind of like what we're talking about. How easy was it to schedule this? Real easy. I came home and said, hey, let's record something.
Oh, okay.
And you said, okay, what are we talking about? I was like, well, we've been doing this two-player thing. Let's talk about that.
Sounds good to me.
Yep. Really easy to set up. Cool. Well, all right. That's it. You guys should go find somebody else and play a two-player game with it. Hopefully somebody you like.
If you want Scarab at your event or to set up a game day at your business, contact us through our website 4 to 8 weeks prior. The Scarab Swarmcast is produced and mixed by John Manus. You can subscribe to the Swarmcast through our podcast site or through iTunes. If you like what you hear, have questions or suggestions, leave a comment on Facebook or you can email us at swarmcast@s-c-a-r-a-b.com. Music on the Scarab Swarmcast is by iFight Dragons at iFightDragons.com, MC Lars at MCLars.com, and Midnight Syndicate at MidnightSyndicate.com.
Poe wrote this poem about the church bells of Fordham University in the Bronx in 1845. 124 years later, hip-hop was born 3 miles away from that very spot. Hear the sledges with the bells, silver bells. What a world of merriment their melody foretells. How they tinkle, tinkle, tinkle in the icy air of night. With the stars that oversprinkle with the crystalline delight. Keeping time, time, time in a sort of runic rhyme. To the tintinabulation resonating very fine. From the jingling and the twinkling of the mellow wedding bells. Golden bells, what a world of happiness we know they must foretell. Through the balmy air of night, how they ring out their delight. From the molten golden notes, all in tune, hella tight. While the liquidity floats on the moon from sound. Cells. What a gush of euphony voluminously wells. How it swells, how it dwells on the future, how it tells. To the swinging and the ringing of the rapture that impels. Of the bells, 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 check the bells, bells, bells. Go to sleep to the rhyming and the chiming of the bells.
Rock, 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 the bells. Rock, 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 rock. Rock, 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 the bells. Rock, 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 rock.
Hear the loud alarm bells, brazen bells. What a tale of terror, now their turbulency tells. In the startled ear of night, how they scream out their affright. Too horrified to speak, only shriek and ignite. In a clamorous appealing to the mercy of the fire. A mad expostulation with the deaf and frantic fire. Leaping higher, higher, higher with a deep desperate desire. And a resolute endeavor that accentuates the pyre. And how now to sit or never by the side of the moon. Oh, the bells.
Bells, 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 know the terror's coming soon. How they clang and they roar, what a horror they outpour. On the bosom of the air, with eternity in store. How the danger ebbs and flows, with the twanging and the clanging. Yet the ear distinctly tells, in the jangling and the wrangling. How the danger sinks and swells, in the anger of the bells. Of the bells, go to sleep to the clamor and the clanging of the bells.
Rock, 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 the bells. Rock, 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 rock the bells. Rock, 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 rock the bells. Rock, 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 rock.
Hear the tolling of the bells, iron bells. What a world of solemn thought their monody compels. In the silence of the night, how we shiver with the fright. At the melancholy menace of their tone, it excites. Hear it float like the rust within our throats, it's a groan. And the people in the steeple all alone. And who tolling, tolling, tolling in that muffled monotone. Feel the glory and soul rolling on that human heart of stone. Because they are neither men nor women, neither brute nor human. The grim reaper is king, well he rolls and he rules. A paean from the bells as his merry bosom swells. With the paean of the bells as he dances with the fools. Keeping time, time, time in a sort of runic rhyme. To the paean of the bells, to the throbbing of the bells. Keeping time, time, time as he knells, knells, knells. Go to sleep to the moaning and the groaning of the bells.
Rock, 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 rock the bells. Rock, 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 rock the bells. Rock, 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 rock the bells. Rock, 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 rock the bells.